broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendrick.
No, I wouldn't do it. I just don't think it's right.
Well, first of all, I think the president's problem is that he was born a Muslim. His father.
I wouldn't say that the United States deserved what happened, but the United States policies were an exception.
Why is Congress so corrupt? David Bitter, he's part of the corruption.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. A news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch. And through the looking glass we go to take you there. And along the way, maybe a couple of laughs. Our website is philhendryshow.com. That's where that really is kind of laugh central there. PhilHendryShow.com, live streaming video of the show right now, as well as live streaming audio. You can go into our archives and find hours and hours and hours and hours and hours of shows going back many, many years. Downloads every day. Every show is downloadable over at our website or at iTunes or whatever you choose. And with a backstage pass, you have access to our comments section and so much more guaranteed email response from me, Phil Hendry. It is not the kind of websites that you're used to around the old World Wide Web. So check it out. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Later on tonight, we've got Don Mixay, professor of engineering from the University of Washington, who will be talking to us about high-tech cyberbullying. I guess that's redundant. Cyberbullying, high-tech bullying. Kids harassing each other by way of email, by way of texting, by way of instant messaging. We'll also have a jam-packed news hour for you. This hour, we're going to start off with a story, as bizarre as it sounds, it is absolutely true. There is a man who is going to be filing a lawsuit, if he hasn't already, against a company called NCSoft of South Korea. It is a game maker. They make these online games or these video games. I suppose some of them are PC games. And this man is suing because he says he became addicted. The court, the U.S. district judge in the case, Alan Kay, has refused to dismiss parts of this man's complaint, clearing the way for a trial. And I don't know if this is the first time that a gamer has sued a company for forcing his addiction or claiming that they addicted him to the game, but that's what's happening. A federal judge allowing a negligence lawsuit to proceed against the publisher of the online virtual world game Lineage 2. And we're going to be talking about the different games with Jeff Dowder, who is with North America Gamers Association. There are allegations that a Hawaii man, and this man's name is Craig Smallwood, became so addicted he's unable to function independently in usual daily activities such as getting up, getting dressed, bathing, or communicating with family and friends. Mr. Smallwood, the plaintiff, claims that NCSoft of South Korea should pay unspecified monetary damages because of the addictive nature of the game. And he also claims to have played Lineage 2 for 20,000 hours between 2004 and 2009, 5 years, 365 days in a year, 24 hours. Somewhere, somebody can do the math, 20,000 hours. 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL is the number here to our show. And joining us right now is Jeff Dowder, North American Gamers Association. Mr. Dowder's in Temple City, California. And how are you this evening, sir?
I'm really good, Mr. Henry, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this because I want to assure your listeners and I want to assure yourself, too, that as perhaps trivial as this might sound, we do consider this very serious.
You do, and I'm not going to take it lightly at all with you. But I dare say that in the day and age of the trivial, frivolous lawsuit, which I'm not making that claim here, a lot of people are questioning these kinds of lawsuits.
All right. Well, let me explain to you why this is not a frivolous lawsuit, and I'm certain somewhere along the line in your program you're going to have a debate with other people on what do you want to call a frivolous lawsuit or what have you. This is not a frivolous lawsuit. This is a very dangerous reality for those of us who have been very committed to gaming for the years that I've been gaming. I'm almost 30. I'm 28 years of age. And I began gaming, intense gaming, probably when I was about 17, with just basic games like, you know, Mario Brothers, and Mortal Kombat and things like that. And I got into the serious gaming with Myth and Halo, and now not only Lineage 2, but there's other games that people can tell you about from my own way of thinking of Black Prophecy, the game that I'm into now, Blood Wars, World of Warcraft.
And I've heard of World of Warcraft.
Yes, sir, World of Warcraft. And these games are created by a variety of different companies. I mean, NCSoft is created in South Korea, but I mean, NCSoft is the ones that create Lineage 2, and that's in South Korea, but also 3D Realms is another game company in Garland, Texas. Activision Blizzard is a game publisher in here in California, Santa Monica. And in Washington is EA Electronic Arts, which they make sports. They're best known for the Madden and the NBA games, things like that.
Right, right. I'm familiar with them. And what is MMORPG?
Just massive role-playing game that, you know, it means just role-playing games in which there are probably, you know, to Lineage 2, it's probably gained in the last few years probably 500,000 people. And I agree that it is a very interesting game, but I also stand with Mr. Smallwood, and gamers all over the world are now actively saying, yeah, these games are addictive. And again, I would bring to my own situation,
Now, what are you? Are you claiming that you have an addiction?
I'm claiming that, yes, I am claiming that I have not an addiction to the sense that I can't stop playing, but I do know that it's impacted my life to the point that I would not be. I think I'd be probably further along in my life right now had I not started playing some of these games. I'm 28 years of age. I continue to. I don't live at home, but I do live with my sister and her husband. In a spare bedroom. Right now I work part-time for the city of Huntington Beach in the service yard there, so it's not even a full-time job. And I'm going to be 30 years old in a year and a half. That certainly would never have taken place had I not been sitting and playing, you know, Guild Wars or, you know, Final Fantasy or something with friends of mine, many of whom are much younger than me, or playing it online when I could have been filling out job applications.
And all right, well, all right, so we're talking to Jeff Dowder right now, folks, and we're talking about being addicted to video games, being addicted to these role-playing games that one can play online, one can play by way of Xbox and the other gaming systems. Is it accurate to call these video games?
Well, in a sense, it's probably inaccurate. Video games, that term came from the fact that you had to play them on your television set. But nowadays, with different kinds of viewing systems, or not necessarily TV sets, TV screens, they're computer monitors. They're not really video games. They're RPGs. I mean, they're called role-playing games. It's a little bit redundant, or it's not even needed to say that they're video games, because you don't really. Everybody knows you're looking at it, you know.
And Jeff, you are saying that you yourself have become addicted or are in danger of being addicted.
Well, I'm saying that it has impacted my life negatively. As I mentioned, I'm living with my sister and my brother-in-law. This man, Mr. Smallwood, is claiming that he's had a very profound it's had a very profound effect on him. He's unable to, and I'm quoting from his lawsuit. We're talking about getting dressed, bathing, communicating. He's had he's got a very, very serious addiction, and this is from the game Lineage 2, and this is a South Korean game, and this also bears some repeating. I think
What do you find significant about that? That it comes from a foreign country?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not familiar. I know that the Koreans and the Asians have been very good at developing these games, but When we're talking now about a whole generation of people like myself and Mr. Smallwood and others who are not doing anything with our lives because of these RPGs that are coming out of Korea, I don't want to be paranoid, but I have to ask myself, how is it happening about like America and everything? Is what I'm saying.
Are you talking about some sort of a role that the military of Korea?
Well, not necessarily the military. It could be a government, some kind of a concerted effort to stupefy. I don't know if stupefy, but to render. To render stupid, or to render, however you want to say it.
Let's say to make it intellectually impotent.
Well, in some way, making the young people of America stupid, and yeah, if you can say Koreans are doing that. I mean, I'm not putting it a very good way, but in a lot of ways, that's the reason for this. These games are so addictive that I'm here talking to you, Mr. Hendry, as a spokesperson for the gamers. But I'm already damaged because of it. Because, as I said, I live with my sister and her brother.
Let's talk about how you're damaged, and then we're going to give our number here 877-876-PHIL to talk to Jeff Dowder about being addicted to RPG role playing games. There is one lawsuit that is being heard. Why are you addicted to these games? Why can't you just turn this thing off?
All right, that's a fair question. First of all, you don't turn it off, because if you turn it off, it's still going on. See, that's the thing. You have to turn the whole game off, and that's hard to do. Turning off the video is easy, but you can walk away with it knowing that it's still going on, even though you can't see it. So if you look at the world of Warcraft, if you look at the world that Lineage creates, if you look at any of these worlds, Guild Wars, Final Fantasy, it's a way, way better world than the one that you live in. And so you want to be in that world way more than you'd ever want to be in this world. If you think about it, I live with my brother-in-law and my sister, who I'm not, I don't get along with them all that well. I live in the spare bedroom, and I take the bus pretty much everywhere because I do have the down payment right now for a car, so I am pretty happy about that, but I don't think I'll have the monthly yet. I gotta make sure that I get enough money at work, see? So I'm riding the bus, I've got a part-time job. If I look at that and I ask myself seriously, how do I feel about that? I'm not happy about that.
But people are gonna say to you, you did that.
Yeah, it's easy to say that I did that, but if there wasn't such a thing as, like Hello Kitty or Black Prophecy, would I be in this situation? And the answer is no. What is the one variable, Mr. Henry? The fact is that these games, if you take them out, I'm not living in a spare bedroom. If you take these games out, I got more than just the down payment for a used car. If you take these games out, I'm living in a house, not an apartment. So that is the variable, and that's what we want to address. And we do believe that there should be damages, but we just don't want to. We don't want to get rid of the games, but we would like people to know that we are addicted to them.
All right, see, that's a whole other thing I got to get into. You don't want to get rid of these games, but you are addicted to the games, and you want financial relief. All right, 877-876-PHIL. We're talking with Jeff Dowder from the North American Gamers Association on a lawsuit that has been filed and will be heard. The U.S. District Judge ruling Alan Kay, he refused to dismiss parts of this lawsuit. Craig Smallwood is the plaintiff. He is accusing NCSoft of South Korea of basically creating a game that caused him to be addicted to it. He's unable to function independently. He can't get up. He can't get dressed. He can't bathe. He can't communicate. And he's asking for unspecified damages. This is a lawsuit that will be heard. At least it's going forward right now. An attorney, by the way, for NCSoft has not responded. 877-876-PHIL. 877-876-PHIL. Do you believe there's such a thing as being addicted to these video games? And if there is such a thing, what do we need to do medically or psychologically to begin to give relief to people that are suffering from this? 877-876-PHIL. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
I forgot to play that one thing.
We'll do it next hour.
This is the world-famous
Bill Hendry Show.
Epic fail.
This is the world famous Bill Hendry Show.
And with me is Jeff Dowder of Temple City, California. He works for the city of Huntington Beach, but he is with the North American Gaming Association. Gamers who are, and this is a specific association, Jeff, and correct me if I'm wrong, of gamers who are challenging the gaming industry, as Mr. Smallwood has, Craig Smallwood, who's filed this lawsuit. You are saying they are culpable and responsible for a kind of new gaming addiction.
Well, about it, you know, if I have something that I do play on different interviews, if I go into television radio interviews, what you just said, Mr. Hendry, is a
epic fail.
Because, and that's just the sound effect that we play. And the reason why I said that is because this is not a new addiction. This is an addiction that's been going on for a long time. It's the first time that we've been able to identify that addiction. And I think that that's important to be able to say, this has been happening for a long time, and for people to say that it has been happening for a long time or that it's not worthy, that is a
epic fail.
And the other thing I wanted to mention is that what we're asking for, you're asking...
Yeah, I want to know, what is the end game here?
Well, we're not playing a game. You know, what that even using that word, you know, is...
epic fail.
What we're doing...
Okay, just tell me, sir, because I got to get to a phone call.
What we want, Mr. Henry, is we want the Obama health care plan to include paying for DG, which is D-gaming, at clinics that are opening and specializing in this. Ultra is a clinic. There are other psychiatric and psychological counseling systems that we want health care insurance or Medicare to pay for. So that is our short. That's our short-term goal.
All right, Jeff Dowder with us, 877-876-PHIL. And now we're talking about, you know, taxpayers paying for what you call a DG, which means D-game.
That is correct.
Boy, you got to do some education first on this thing called gaming or RPG addiction. 877-876-PHIL. Here is Scott in Toronto, Canada, listening on CFRB. Scott, go ahead. You're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Really wanted to comment on this. I just wanted to say that I guess I look upon so-called victims of RPG or video game addiction with just about the same sympathy I would look upon somebody with, let's say, you know, a cocaine addiction or an alcohol addiction. I mean, you can make excuses all day about how something is addicting or how, you know, it's designed to be addicting even, but at the end of the day, I mean, everyone's a human being. Everybody has their own willpower. And if you don't have, like, you know, the internal fortitude to say, you know what, maybe I should go out, fill up job applications instead of sitting on my butt playing games for hours, then, I mean, I can't bring myself to be sympathetic at all.
Well, okay, Scott, I do appreciate it, but you know that you've just earned yourself from the Gamers Association
epic fail
with that logic, okay?
You know, you're playing that epic fail sound effect, and that's fine. What is that proving?
What it's proving is, what I'm saying is this. If this gentleman believes, and he's in Canada, where I know national health care pays for cocaine addiction and pays for treatment of people who have drug addictions, and he has no problem with that, then why would he have a problem with me needing to go to a clinic to get DG'd?
Who said I would have a problem with that, though? Like, who said I don't have a problem? I never said I agree with
You said it's about willpower. You said it's about willpower.
You make excuses about anything. Should we then blame, you know, Dr. James Naismith for inventing basketball because many a misspent youth has, you know, maybe even spent playing too many hours at that game when maybe a pro career didn't pan out and, you know, whoever that child was.
If you can show me an instance where somebody has played basketball, I mean, to the extent that it's affecting an entire generation. Yeah, I'm sorry, man, but that's
epic fail.
You know what you're saying?
That's not an argument. Playing epic fail.
No, but I mean, what he's saying is, you show me a generation of people who are like living in their dad's garage because they like, that doesn't add up.
Well, maybe that speaks
to the generation or the weakness of the generation rather than the power of these video games.
Right. Scott, thank you for your call. We'll be back with Jeff Dowder on the addiction of video games, 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil.
Oh, come on.
Epic fail.
That sounds cool.
Talking with Mr. Jeff Dowder from the North American Gamers Association. They are a pro. I don't know. How do you describe yourselves, Jeff?
Well, I mean, it's all.
Do you guys, you call yourselves a pro gaming rehabilitation organization? But isn't there a shorter way of saying that?
Yeah, no. I was going to say we're a pro gaming, but also a pro rehabilitative organization, which means that we are not here to shut down the gaming industry. We're not here to shut down RPG. We're here to tell people that we're hurting, that we need help, that we need assistance, because gaming addiction does exist. And to that end, you know, I told you, Mr. Henry, that I'm here in my life. I've admitted to you how my life has failed. This evening I've been sitting, before I came on the air to talk to you, I've been sitting watching a TV special on Frank Perdue because I feel like I need to do something to learn about business. And that's as far as I've gone.
You're watching a TV special with the guy, the chicken guy?
I believe that's. But what I'm saying is that's the most I've done to learn about another way of living in probably years, and that's how serious this is. And I think the Obama health care plan should address that. Otherwise, the whole health care plan is a
epic fail.
And I know you don't. Yep.
Well, you can stop playing that sound effect because it sounds like you're trivializing this.
No, that is a sound effect from a game. And I'm trying to say the way that the industry has dealt with it, the way that the American people have dealt with it up to this point has been an epic fail.
All right, I understand. 877-876-PHIL, as we talk to Jeff Dowder about addiction to games, to online games. We need to have someone remote open up line six for me, please. Line six. Ben? Hi, Ben in Nashville. You're on the Phil Henry Show, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, I want to know if this guy's really serious. I mean, how can you actually claim that a video game has ruled your life to the point where you have no will to do anything else?
Because of the psychological addiction, that's what it's about. And DGing and psychologists, there's two or three different places.
You keep talking about DGing or de-gaming.
Right. De-gaming, right.
So that would be like rehabilitation for gaming? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
Does that mean after you are DG'd that you're going to quit playing games? You know,
it doesn't mean that at all. It means that
that would be the equivalent of someone who's addicted to cocaine. I'm just going to do a little bit of cocaine.
The difference
between an addiction and something that you're infatuated with, an addiction, it has a chemical effect.
Right.
You know, like then it releases different endorphins in your body to alter your train of.
What do you mean?
Alter your train of thought, but. Playing games is something that you consciously make a decision to do. It's not like you're smoking a game.
No, I am addicted. Look, that line of reasoning right there
is an epic fail.
That's what people have been saying. Okay, what they don't understand is when you're on a roller coaster. Okay, when you're on a roller coaster, are you taking a drug? No. But would you agree that when you're on a roller coaster, there's a chemical change that takes place in your body? that allows you to feel a certain way, that may allow you to feel happier or more, I don't know, more excited or something, of course. So there are chemical changes, and we got addicted to that, and we need to, you know, have the DG.
But wait a minute. Even if there's chemical changes, what this man's asking, you're going to go back to the very thing that caused those chemical changes and play again.
Okay. All right. See, I knew you were going to say that. Once again, that's a line of thinking that's...
Epic fail.
Will you stop playing that epic fail, man? Because it's really, like, I get it.
But that's how we reinforce the message. Okay? And...
The message is reinforced.
Well, right, but the thing is, you're not going to quit playing games, so what's the point? You want Obama and his administration to de-game people with taxpayers' money, but it's not going to do anything. You're still going to play games.
No, but here's the thing.
You may not play games 100 hours a week now, but you're still going to play games.
Are you going to play these games to the point? Yeah, I want to ask this one question. I'm sorry to interrupt you there.
No problem.
Who am I talking to? Ben. Ben, but I want to ask you, Jeff, are you going to be playing games to the level that you're, you know, sitting on your rear end at your sister's house?
No, I told you. I want to go out and get a job. Am I going to stop gaming? No. But we will have it under control. And that's the thing that we...
That's what every alcoholic, every drug addict, anybody that ever had a substance abuse problem would say, I'm going to have it under control.
It's not the same. It's the same in the way that Ben was saying that you're not smoking it. That's right. That's true. We're trying to stop it so that we can still play the game. See, that's why I've been playing the epic fail.
Because okay, there's a difference between, stopping and cutting back. I have a 40-hour a week job, week in, week out. I work 40 hours a week, you know.
Right.
And me and my friends play games. I play games online.
Okay.
I have plenty of time to play games and still be a contributing
member of society. What are you playing? Are you playing?
I play sports games. I play RPGs.
Yeah.
I play role-playing games. I play, you know, Modern Warfare online. I have friends that
play
World of Warcraft online. But they are still productive members of society.
They play Lineage too?
Well, why are these guys that are friends of this man, Ben, why are they productive members of society and you're not?
I doubt seriously if they're playing the same level that we're at, because we're at the highest level of like blood,
right,
blood
that's
halo.
Job. Yeah, that's because I have bills to pay. That's because
I'm not putting a guy. If a guy's an alcoholic, I'm not going to put him down. I'm saying I need to be DG'd so I can get back into the world, into society. I'm sitting here watching a special on Frank Perdue, and Mr. Henry's laughing about that. I'm going, that may be funny, but that's the first time I've done anything.
An alcoholic is drunk. He is physically and mentally altered due to the level of alcohol where he cannot, you know, physically function to do anything. Whereas you, under no form of intoxication whatsoever, are just sitting on your rear end at the house in front of a computer screen.
Here's what I think of your opinion.
Epic fail.
Okay, I'm sorry, but
see, you're not even arguing the point.
Well, that's exactly
what okay. My main point is you
all
are
right,
not physically inept to work.
No, that's wrong because I'm currently living with my sister and her husband in Downey, and that I don't know where you're from, but
Downey is in so you're living in Downey.
That's not what I call living. So.
All right. Ben, thanks very much, sir, and good points of view there. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go over to Jennifer. She's listening to us in Wasilla, Alaska, which is the home of Sarah Palin. Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
That's right. Yeah, I was just saying that this guy, I can't believe that he's saying he can't pull himself away from these games or whatever. I was making the point that it's like a child when you have parents in the room or whatever, you have to take those games away, throw them in the trash, get rid of them. You know, it's your responsibility
to teach children. This kind of thinking is really old school. I mean, that's like saying to an alcoholic, you know, what we got to do is, with an alcoholic, is get rid of booze. That's not what's going to cure alcoholism. We've already had prohibition in this country. It doesn't cure, it's not going to cure me, it won't make me DG, and it's not going to cure drug addiction. So I don't know what this lady's talking about. You know, we're talking about something that is serious, and your entire phone call, ma'am, you know what I'm going to do.
Epic fail.
You know? You know, ma'am?
I was talking about him being an adult. That if he, once you're not a child anymore, no. You're an adult.
Well, you're not going off with the epic fail.
Those choices. You can't sit around and watch.
Are you saying that an alcoholic doesn't need to be detoxed? He just should walk away from alcohol?
No, never said that.
Well,
I said
that's
that
exactly
we have choices. No, I said we have
that's
choices
exactly
in life.
Exactly what you're saying.
All right, well, let me ask you this. Are you saying, let me ask Jeff this. Are you saying, Jeff, that you will not do anything about your gaming addiction until you get insurance coverage?
That's the only way we're going to be able to survive. If we got to have some kind of medical coverage to get us pulled away from the imagery that has been created by Koreans. And this lady's in Alaska. I would think she'd be one of the first people to have sympathy for what has happened to me.
No, I can hear it in your voice. I mean,
instead
I feel like you're really hurting. I just...
that's great.
Go over to James. James, you're on the Phil Henry Show.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call, Mr. Henry.
Yes, sir.
I would like to... there's a few things I'd like to say, but I'll say it as bluntly as I can. The thing is that his addiction is psychological, maybe. But you know what? If you want to get rehabilitated, have your sister not pay the electric bill. How about that?
What are you talking about? Well, what do you think that's going to do, man? It's going to make me not game?
What do I think it's going to do? I think what you're trying to do is pull a shammy on the American people that are paying taxes already for people that can't turn off their computers. Absolutely
epic
ridiculous.
Fail.
That's an epic fail.
Absolutely ridiculous,
first
man.
Of all,
I have kids that are 20 years old and 19 years old. I went through all those years, and you know what they did? They ended up getting a job and realizing that when you walk out that front door, really, you know, that's when realization comes alive. Not behind your computer.
I want to get a job. I do want to get a job, and I want to get a job as badly as I can, but right now,
what is stopping you, my good man?
I'm just trying to.
You know, I mean,
I'm being damaged by the Koreans that made the game.
You keep saying Koreans.
Wow,
I really don't like that. What are you calling the Koreans that made the game?
Well, you know, they made lineage, and they've made a lot of the games. All I'm saying, you're saying, wow, whatever. You know, I'm saying that.
I'm driving a Nissan, and I'm not blaming the Japanese in case I get into a wreck. You know what
no,
I mean?
No, I'm not blaming the Japanese. I'm just saying, don't you think it's... No, of course I'm not blaming... But I am saying, man... I'm not the only one, man. This Mr. Smallwood, who has sued NC South Korea.
My good man, is I believe that you are going down the wrong tunnel as far as wanting any kind of compensation for what you can't turn off. That is absolutely ridiculous.
No, I'm all on
you know, that's absolutely ridiculous,
assistance.
Man. You know what I mean? You might as well be addicted to porn, man. You know what I mean?
Oh, that
Come
dude.
On, that's crazy.
Okay, thank you very much for your call, James. I appreciate it. 877-876-PHIL. You with that epic fail.
Well, I mean, he walked right into that. You know?
All right, well, you're walking into a lot of stuff here that we have yet to get you unstuck from. Jeff Dowder joining us as we talk about addiction to RPGs, video role-playing games. And he's discussing a variety of games that he himself is addicted to. Craig Smallwood is an American. I don't know what state this man lives in, who filed a federal lawsuit against NCSoft of South Korea saying that he is addicted to their game Lineage 2. He's played 20,000 hours of it between the years of 2004 and 2009, and he's asking for unspecified damages. And this is a very interesting lawsuit, especially since the U.S. District Judge in the case, Alan Kay, has refused to dismiss it. And it could very well, it's moving toward trial. 877-876-PHIL. Is RPG addiction a reality, and should it be a part of our insurance coverage? The world-famous Phil Henry Show.
You're now listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
What?
It stands for Massively Multiplayer Role-Playing Games. That's what MMORG stands for. And the fact that you came into this interview not knowing that, Mr. Henry, is also...
Epic fail.
I mean, and the reason why I'm doing that is that that is a part of, in a lot of ways, the addiction that I have, is to be able to have with me at all times these elements of the games that I like.
And all right, so that big voice saying "epic fail" is a part of a game that you like?
That's correct, yes, sir. It's from a, I think it's from, I can't remember right now, but I think it was from the Terrace game, and it's one of my favorites, and it's also something I think that articulates a lot of what's been going, you know, what happens or what's been happening around here lately.
All right, 877-876-PHIL. Should people with gaming addictions get insurance coverage, and is there such a thing? Here is Mike in Indianapolis on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Phil. Thanks for taking my call.
How you doing? Yes, sir.
Hey, and hello to Jeff as well. Before
you
went to break, you good, good. Before you went to break, you asked a question about, you know, is this kind of addiction real? And I called in to say yes, it is. I'm
there. You go.
Now,
I mean,
but I spent about 9 years playing EverQuest.
Yeah.
And I can attest to the fact that this is a legitimate condition.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Turn that off. Yeah?
Well, I can attest to the fact that, you know, from my perspective, this is a legitimate condition that Jeff's talking about.
Exactly. And so we are looking to have it included in some kind of coverage, some kind of insurance coverage.
Well, and the reality is I'm not sure about that aspect of it, but... from my perspective, I have an addictive personality, right? I understand. I had to quit playing games cold turkey, you know, and it's been about, I don't know, 7 years. And to this day, you know, like when a new expansion pack comes out or something, I get a twinge, you know. But
there should be insurance? But there shouldn't be insurance coverage?
Well, that's where, I think you need to understand, I'm also addicted to games and to gaming. And if you're like me, and like Craig Smallwood, basically my life, my career, I'm almost 30 and I don't have a car. Do you have a car?
Well, no, I'm a very successful man now, but the point I
would
really...
Do you have a car? Do you have a car?
I have a few of them.
Well, he's
a
successful man. Yeah, he's got a car.
Okay, and you walked away from it.
Yeah, I've walked away from a cold turkey, but it wasn't easy by any means. But what I want to
All right, well, thanks for your call, Mike. I appreciate it very much. 877-876-PHIL. Mark in Nashville. Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, man.
Yes, sir.
Why didn't you just walk off? I mean, I've been addicted to games.
Well, why doesn't a heroin addict just walk away? If a heroin addict can't do it,
it's not easy. Yeah, it's not easy, but it's either you do it or I came damn near close to being homeless. And, you know, when I looked at my notice from my people giving me rent, it said either pay or get the hell out. That's
from gaming.
Okay, I need to do something about this, and I went out and got a job. I sold all that crap. And it sucks. I mean, I can't even go over to my friend's house sometimes.
And you, from gaming?
Yeah. I went cold turkey. I haven't touched one in 6 months. I mean, all my friends constantly talking about it, and I don't dare because I know I'll get stuck on it again.
Do you ever have to? I got to carry the sound effects with me. See?
Can you stop with that, man?
Do we really have to
keep hearing video game sound effects?
Yeah, could you turn that off, please, man? All right, because this.
I mean,
so you walked away from it, Mark. You walked away from it, Mark. How long ago?
Yeah, what did you
Six
get?
Months?
Arcade?
I haven't touched a game. Since, let's see.
Did you get
Super Mario?
Did you get
started, Zelda, and
did
World
you get
of Warcraft,
DG'd?
EverQuest.
Did you get DG'd
time,
at all?
EverQuest.
I just
went
deaf from it. Did you get DG'd?
No, I just walked off on my
All right,
own.
Man.
I mean, it's
one
better.
One more call here. Thanks. Larry on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead, Larry.
All right. Thanks for my call. I was.
Yes, sir.
I'm interested that a district judge agreed that this case was worthy to go forward, you said?
U.S. district judge, yeah, Alan Kay. Yeah. This is in Hawaii, by the way.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in Hawaii, a lot of gaming in Hawaii.
Well, I just wanted to say, I mean, I hear in his voice it sounds like that he's really concerned about it, but it seems to me that, I mean, we're put on this earth to help other people. And you really, by helping other people, you know, in whatever way, there used to be a lot of civic responsibility in the United States, volunteering and helping.
Well, I can't really do that right now because I've got this addiction. You want me to help people, nobody's helping me.
Well, actually, you're wrong on that respect because it doesn't
a lot
take
of ways,
that.
Epic fail.
It's the way.
Will you knock it off with the epic fail, please? All right, thank you very much. We're going to be back with, Don Mixa. Don Mixa on cyberbullying. Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
But if we're all going to talk about 9/11, why don't we talk about how not so much the
clearly, people... Clearly, Dr. Seifel did not know how to work Facebook. Maybe a great...
I want you to meet me somewhere tonight.
Well, first of all, I think the president's problem is that he was born...
World-famous Phil Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch. Where we go through the looking glass to find it. And oftentimes, a couple of laughs along the way are found. Don Mixa joins us this hour to discuss cyberbullying. Don Mixa is a professor of engineering at the University of Washington. He's going to be with us to discuss this, I guess, high-tech bullying, cyberbullying, texting, and that kind of thing being on the rise. Representative Alan Grayson blames Bush for allowing 9/11 to happen. Affiliate spotlight tonight in Providence, Rhode Island, WSAR, 1480 AM. And in Syracuse, New York, WFBL, 1390 AM. Great to have you stations on the Phil Henry Network. It's great to have you along the way. And if you guys go to philhenryshow.com, you can look at our affiliate list there. We've got affiliates for you all over the place. And a brand new classic podcast is up. Nice Camel Toe from Steve Bozell. This classic podcast on our homepage and downloadable there, as well as at iTunes. If you guys are plugged in over there, you can get it. So visit our website. We've got a live streaming video of the show happening right now as well, and lots of archives. 877-876-PHIL. Being bullied in cyberspace and sexting, S-E-X-T-I-N-G, are major problems for school-age kids. And parents need to be aware of this problem to protect them. According to experts, research suggests that as many as 25% of kids in the United States report being subjected to cyberbullying, which is the use of technological devices to deliberately harass or harm other people through email, text messaging, instant messaging, cell phones, and online social media. And coming on the line with us tonight to talk about this, is a man who is not a, he's not an elementary school teacher, but he does have kids in school. He is an educator, Don Mixa from the University of Washington up in Seattle. Don, how are you tonight?
Well, Phil, I couldn't be better. It's a Friday night, and very happy to be along the way.
So, Don, you have school-age kids. Now, your eldest boy is how old?
And he is my only son, Phil.
Oh, okay.
He's 13 years old.
13 years old, and you are very familiar with this thing called cyberbullying, sexting. You're familiar with this idea of high-tech bullying?
Well, Phil, that's a roundabout way of saying, yes, my son has been involved in that. And as I discussed with your staff before we went on the air, my son has, he takes after, I suppose you could say, his mother a little bit because she's got kind of an aggressive nature. I've always been the more congenial of the two of us, but he's got a very aggressive nature. And he has, cyberbullied, if you want to call it that, sexting, emailing. He's also made videos. He's a big kid, and he's a tough kid. And And it is something we're not very proud of. We have asked him to not do it. We are also aware of the fact that as political progressives, which his mother and I are both progressive, we are liberal, and we vote the straight Democratic Party ticket. We're also aware of the fact that he is using a high-tech or a 21st century device in what he's doing. So that if he is, in point of fact, cyberbullying or pushing kids around or saying something dirty or nasty to a girl, he is doing it by way of his cell phone. And he's doing it by way of a iPhone, or he's doing it by way of his computer. So it is something that we can say, at least as progressive parents, we can say that at least he is availing himself of this kind of technology. And I think that's the most you can ask of yourself, and I think that's as a parent. And
all right, well, but I don't know that that makes any difference.
Okay, I'm willing to talk about that.
Well, I mean, you're a parent, and you're a progressive parent, a liberal parent, as you say, and that is all well and good, but your son has been sexting girls. He has made videos, and he has cyberbullied, right?
He has cyberbullied, yeah, but here is...
I mean, isn't that all right? Isn't that correct?
I don't know if that's correct, Phil. I know he's an aggressive kid, if you want to call it bullying. I guess you have to take into consideration who it is that's being bullied. But again, I'm not denying that that he has been aggressive in the way he's handled things. But I am also very proud of the fact that he is doing it by way of high-tech devices, and that is part of the fact that he has a couple of very progressive parents now.
But again, we're going back on this thing that he may be bullying kids, but he's doing it with his cell phone, and he's doing it with his... What other devices does he use?
Well, he has an iPhone.
All right, he has an iPhone. Does he have a computer, obviously?
He has a computer, yeah. He's got a computer. He's got two cell phones and an iPhone. And he uses the iPhone so that he can text, or I guess in this instance he's sexting, which of course we don't want him to do. And he sends videos. And he sends these messages. And he had sent a video of to a young lady of his of a private area of his body, which was immediately confiscated. And we went in and we talked to the school.
Now, he videoed himself naked.
Part of himself naked, yeah.
Okay. When this was discovered by the teacher, who discovered this?
Well, I believe the parents of the girl that received this discovered it, and we went over and we talked to them, and we said, well, look, you know, and I introduced myself as I'm a professor at the University of Washington, and her father was a, I don't know what he did, but it wasn't anything quite as significant as what I do, and I think that was not lost on him. And
I don't know what that means.
Well, what it means is, there's no point in making a big issue out of it if you can sit down and talk it out like adults, especially if you're talking to a man who has a higher pay grade, if you will, than you.
What does that mean?
What is, I don't understand.
What does it mean? So you make more money than the girl's father. Your son sent her a video that was a sexual video, and I'm sure it frightened the girl.
I don't know, Phil. I don't know if it frightened her. I don't know if the father found it. She was enjoying it, for all I know. But I'm just saying, when I talked to the parents, and when my wife Celia and I both talked to the parents, we said, well, look, we can handle this a lot of different ways. I said, if you look at it, you know, it's not that big of a deal. I said, we're very progressive parents. We're very liberal. All right, it's my son, and he had his pants off.
Boy.
Well, I said, so if it's a matter of money, and they said, well, so we handled it that way.
So you paid these parents money so that you wouldn't have to have your son arrested.
Well, he's not going to get arrested, Phil.
I don't know, maybe not arrested, but so you paid off these parents, and meanwhile your son continues to send these kinds of messages, correct?
you know, Phil.
Well, I mean, all I'm trying to do, I'm trying to establish here, Don, the reality here, because cyberbullying, and you're trying to say that it isn't so bad because he's using a cell phone, you know.
Well, we're proud of him that he's using a high tech device because we stand for the future. We are progressive people. We're very liberal. You can bully a kid. Or you can bully a kid by way of a text message, or you can bully a kid by way of a video. Now, this was a video that he took of his you-know-what, and he sent to the girl. Okay, great, enough said. But he did a piece for YouTube of a girl that he didn't like, and it was about a farm animal or something. I don't know what it was. It was pretty, it was very rude, and I told him I thought it was rude, but at the same time, it was very creative.
Of a farm animal about a girl that he's in school with.
That is right, yeah. And I told him, I said, look, you can't do this. I said, it's a very interesting video. But he had a pig oinking and rolling in the mud, and it had a picture of the girl and everything. The point that I'm trying to make, Phil, is this. I don't think, at the end of the day, the people who need to answer for this are the parents of the kid that's doing the bullying. The people who need to answer this, the parents of the kid that's being so-called bullied, because nobody is standing up for my rights. No one's standing up for my son's rights. See? And as a progressive, I'm simply saying, hey, here's something in my son's corner. He is bullying these kids using a cell phone.
But so what, man? So he's using a cell phone.
He's using an iPhone, I'm sorry.
He's using an iPhone. What difference does it make? He's still bullying them. He sent a video of his penis. Is that right? I mean, I don't know.
That is correct, yeah.
To some girl. Then he made a video of another girl with a pig. Now, you think that it's somehow a noteworthy...
Well, I don't know if it was a real pig, Phil, but he had a...
Well, it doesn't matter. You feel it's noteworthy that it's being done, this bullying is being done high-tech, and it's being done creatively, but it still is attacking these kids, and it has to be stopped, and when you were confronted by a couple of parents, you basically paid the family off.
Well, we paid them off, Phil. From this standpoint, we wanted to solve the problem. And I said, if you want the police, we can get the police. I said, can we solve this with a checkbook? And they took the checkbook. Who looks out for the rights of the parents whose kids are the so-called bullies? See, that's my point.
Who looks out for the rights of the parents of the kids who are the so-called bullies? Well, right now what you're saying...
That's what I asked.
Well, right now what you're saying is that your son and other kids that are cyberbullying are not that bad because at least they're doing it high-tech. And I don't see the difference at all. I see a new kind of bullying... I'm not saying that it's going to cause school shootings. I'm not one of those people. I'm not in that school of thought which says, hey, wow, the kid got bullied. He's going to turn around and get a gun. I don't believe that. I think the kids that pick up guns are far more disturbed than just getting bullied. They got a lot of bad stuff going on. But you're excusing your son here, Don. And I think it's troubling.
No, I'm not, Phil.
You're not excusing your son.
No, I am not excusing my son. I told my son that I wished he didn't do it. But I'm asking you, isn't it fair to say that there is a level of creativity in a child that's going to video, even if it's his, you know, private area, and send it off, and there is a kind of a cinema verite creativity to that that I just love. And you're not willing to give him that break.
No, I'm not willing to give him that break. I don't think there's anything to turning on the video portion of a cell phone. Don Mixa from the University of Washington here on the Phil Hendry Show. Our number is 877-876-PHIL. Should cyberbullying kids, are they a cut above the regular bullies? Are they a different kind of bully? Maybe they're not even a bully at all because they're not physically abusing. They are using cell phones and they are using computers. So maybe these kids are, in point of fact, not so much cyberbullies. They're just expressive kids. 877-876-PHIL. You heard Don, his son, sent the video to a girl. The kid had his pants off, videoing this, and sent it to a girl. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-877-PHIL. Welcome back here on this Friday night. Don Mixa from the University of Washington is with us. And we're talking about cyberbullying. Interesting story here in Health Day News, Don, that being bullied in cyberspace and sexting are major problems for school-age kids, and parents need to be aware of this to protect them, says an expert. You're here talking about your own son, who you admit is a cyberbully. He has his iPhone. You said he's got two other phones?
I guess he's got a Nokia. He's got one other phone. But look, I want to jump in here. You got to let me jump in. When you are bullying another kid, you're doing a cyberbullying job, what have you. I told my son that the best thing to do is to, if you're going to, let off a little bit of steam. And, you know, these kids, Phil, they're learning how to do the business of the future. This is how business is done. It's done over the iPhone. It's done over the computer. So that if you have a young man who's, he says to a girl that he thinks she's a pig or, you know, some childish thing, is that much different than how we conduct business today? And as a progressive, as a liberal, I would tell you that there's a lot worse language going on between men and women in the business world than there is right now in the high school arena.
Oh, come on, Don. I don't want to get into that kind of nonsense. We're talking about kids, okay?
I don't believe it's nonsense at all, Phil. You're talking about, you know, kids that, you know, look, here's the thing. When I talk to a parent and their kid has been bullied by my son, I say to my son, make sure that it's a young person who is perhaps their parents need something. And, we've solved more problems taking parents out on our boat, take them over to Bainbridge Island, and they go over to Pike's Fish Market, and they look at the fish, and, you know, the next thing you know, they're happy. So I don't think it's that big of a deal to a lot of these parents.
Well, you've been buying off some of these people. That's what I heard you say. You got a checkbook out, you know, and you got your boat out.
I don't call it buying them off. I mean, I ask them, what will it take?
And then you take them on a boat ride. All right, 877-876-PHIL. We're going to go to some phone calls here and see what folks are saying about this idea of cyberbullying. Leslie in Redding, California, listening on KCNR. Hello, Leslie. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Don Mixa.
Hello.
Good evening to you, ma'am.
Hi.
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 I really think that the gentleman you're speaking to needs some serious help himself. For him to think that just because the bullying is being done via iPhone or something like that is just sick. He's going to raise a monster.
Well, what I'm trying to say is that we have business being done on iPhones right now. Leslie, if you got a man who works for a major corporation, and he's talking to a woman, she's in New York, and he says, you know something, you're acting like a pig.
You know, I understand.
I mean, is that different from what these young people are going to do?
It's totally different. Yeah. What you're talking about is condoning a terrible action by your son, and then you are definitely buying people off, you know, so that your son doesn't go to jail. It is illegal, and people are...
I don't know.
Listen to me for a minute.
Yeah.
Kids are being arrested and having to register as sex offenders for doing exactly what your son is doing. And it's true. You can check it out.
I don't think that what my son did was...
She's right, Don, and this is what the thing. Your son sent over the internet or over the airwaves of whatever... He sent a video of his penis, basically, which is considered to be a sex crime, no matter what the age.
All right, and but
and that's what always
he has been. This is a very progressive thing to send a video to a girl. It used to be you'd just send her flowers, and I think there's an awful lot of misunderstanding going on. And this young man means, you know, if a guy sends you a video of his penis.
If he thinks that he's going to try to attract somebody by sending him a picture of his penis, he's sick, and you're raising a sick monster.
Ma'am, I'm asking you, with the modern day, why do they make iPhones with video cameras in them? Answer me that.
So that maybe people are not with their family can contact their family or their friends, and you know, be in touch with each other. It's not to send sexually the videos.
I think that we've put too much technology into the hands of these kids, and I don't think you can call them sex monsters.
All right. Very good point, Leslie. Thank you for your call. 877-876-PHIL. Let's go on to Jerry in Louisville, Kentucky. Jerry, you're on the Phil Hendry Show with Don Mixa. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I was just telling your screener there that if this guy would have showed up at my house after his son sent me this picture, that I would have committed a horrible felony.
Sir, my son wouldn't have sent you the picture.
Yeah, well, listen, I don't see difference. I don't see much difference in your son sending some guy's daughter a. I mean, what would you do if somebody did that?
You're not a 13-year-old boy, sir, are you? If you're a 13-year-old boy, then I can certainly. This was a 13-year-old boy. Let's talk about what we're dealing with here. There's a 13-year-old boy and a girl, and he has all this technology that these companies give them, and they put it into their hands, and the kid says, hey, look, here's my penis. And this boy, as I said, he's 13, not 18. And so I said, look, let's take care of this. You want a boat ride? I took him out on my boat. They looked at the guys throwing the fish back and forth at Pike's Fish Market. What do you want?
Listen, you know, I don't blame your son for this. I don't blame your son for this. I don't blame your son for this. I blame you for it. And I'm just telling you, Jack.
Well, then why would you take it out of my wife?
Well, no, I'm just listen. I'm just
show my
I'm
wife
just,
your. You show my wife your penis. It's going to be.
I would hope that it would upset you. And I'm telling you, if you'd have taken me out on the phone, I'd have thrown you overboard.
Well, don't you want to see Pike's fish market because they throw the fish back and forth?
Phil Hendry.
Call them the fishmongers or something like that. I don't know what it's called. It's ridiculous.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
877-876-PHIL. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. out on the East Coast, and the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about continues here. We have Don Mixa on the line with us, Professor Mix, I should say, a professor of engineering at the University of Washington, joining us as we talk about cyberbullying, sexting, a major problem for school kids. Don, you have a son, a 13-year-old boy, who has been involved in this kind of thing. And you sound to me, and we're going to go to some phone calls, 877-876-PHIL. You sound to me like a father who has a son with no more serious a problem than, oh, I don't know, throwing rocks at some old farmhouse or something.
Oh, I know. No, Phil, forgive me if I sound that way.
Well, you're saying, oh, well, you know, he sent a video of his penis, you know.
Let's interrupt here for a second, okay? Because you said it there, you said he sent his penis. My son didn't send his penis to anyone. What he did is he sent a video of himself with his pants off, skipping through the yard or something like that. And the young lady said, well, you know, a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I don't know what she said, but the father found it.
Did she give it to her dad?
See, that's the part I don't know. I don't think she did. I think her father found it, and he's the one that raised all the hell, and that's when I said, well. So I would say the following thing. You've got kids and parents that are the parents of kids that are so-called cyberbullies. What do you say to me when I say to a parent, you know, my son is simply engaged in the kind of dialoguing that's going to be happening in his life, and it goes on right now, where you're sending a text or you're sending a video to someone, and you're saying, you know, your pants are off, and you're saying, out of hell with you. You know, business is business.
Well, you tell me where in the real world, in the adult world, business is conducted where some guy sends a video from himself to somebody else with his pants off.
You know what, Mr. Hendry? Maybe you missed some of the news that we've been hearing, but it seems to me every week we've got some ridiculous, you know, something from Washington about someone with his pants off. I don't know.
I haven't heard anything. I haven't heard it. I certainly haven't heard how business is conducted that way. You know,
well, I can tell you that business is conducted in some pretty aggressive ways, and I think to punish my son, and call him a cyberbully, when all he did was, you know, send a video of his pants coming off, I think is cruel, and I think again we're not giving him credit for using an iPhone as opposed to just taking his pants off in front of her, knocking on the door. You know,
all right. So you think that you know, you're saying two different things.
I don't think so.
I think you are. On the one hand, it's not bad. On the other hand, even if it is bad, at least he did it with an iPhone. That's high tech, and he didn't knock on the door and do it in front of her. 877-876-PHIL, as we talk with Don Mixa about cyberbullying. Russ in Springfield, Tennessee. Go ahead, sir. You're on the Phil Hendry Show with Don Mixa.
Sir, thank you for taking my phone call.
Yes, sir.
I'd like to make a comment about this professor. What an arrogant, ignorant, elitist moron. Sir, if your son had sent that to my 13-year-old daughter, it was funny you made comments about throwing rocks at Barnes because I'm driving through a beautiful country up here. But, sir, I would go out behind my house, cut down a hickory sapling, and whittle with my redneck whittling knife and make a beautiful piece of artwork that I would beat the devil out of your son. And if you would say, and if you said anything, I would cold cock you because obviously you think it's okay to bully, whether it's on a computer or an iPhone, or if you put a billboard up on the side of the interstate, or if you mass mail letters, or you walk around the street. It's the same thing, my friend. I'm going to tell you what,
you just threatened to beat me up. I think I have a right to respond to that.
Please,
I would suggest,
as a conservative Christian, I'm going to pray for your soul. Thank you.
Well, I don't believe that for a minute. You know, that's another way of telling somebody to go to hell, saying that you're going to pray for them. But
I think the man's point is that he is very upset and angry with your attitude.
Well, he may be upset and angry with my attitude, Phil, but let me say this. The first thing is, my son did not physically lay a hand on anybody, but that man wanted to beat me up, and he wanted to beat my son up. And yet all my son did was send a not even his penis, it was a cyber penis, it was a cyber representation of his penis, all right? Now, I would ask your listeners, and I would ask every thinking, intelligent parent out there, what is worse, a cyber image of a penis, or someone being beaten half to death with wood fashioned into a stick of some kind, made in the South by a Southerner? I think you know what I'm saying there.
No, I don't. And you know what, Don? Your point is made. What's worse, sending a picture or being beaten up? And I would say to you that I think physical damage as well as psychological damage, we cannot begin to quantify what's worse in these situations, and I'm not even going to go there. I would say that the psychological damage done by certain things is every bit as scarring as physical scars can be. How's that for an answer?
I think it's a great I think you averted the question entirely. I think it's very, very artful.
I didn't avert anything. I think I answered the question. And to say that, and what does this mean about in the South?
Well, he was talking about whittling something you could beat a man with. He doesn't like me talking to my son sending a virtual penis, but he's talking about beating something, so enough said.
Well, all right, 877-876-PHIL, 877-876-PHIL. Here is Tony in Toronto. Go ahead, Tony, you're on the Phil Hendry Show.
Good morning, Phil.
Good morning.
I've been listening to this conversation you've been having for some time. I'm wondering where you found this gentleman.
Yes, sir. Well, Don, where did we find you?
Well, you found me at the University of Washington, although I light bomb all over the place, you know, Seattle and the northwest Tacoma.
I think you're a bit of a hypocrite, because you said at one stage that you're a liberal, and another point in time you said
very,
that
very liberal.
You felt that
very
you had
liberal.
A better handle on morality because you earned more money than the parents of the girl that was involved. I don't see where money.
Well, I think you can solve a
morality.
Problem. Well, let me ask you a question. If a man says to you, "I don't like your son sending this picture," and you say to him, "Will money take care of it?" and he says, "Yes." Are we to therefore refer to Tony because he's the one that's got the answer ultimately, or can these two men work it out themselves?
Well, I've got a better answer I think the way you're handling this whole thing, you're enabling a sociopath. I think you're raising a kid who's going to have more troubles in his life, and it won't be his fault. It'll all be yours. I really do.
Sir, I don't know. Business these days, as you well know, is conducted over cyberspace.
What
does
this have to do with business? This is not business. This is morality.
You're
if
talking
you can't
to,
raise
you know,
a child with decent
right.
morals, then
I don't
raise children.
Sir, why do you call this immoral when you know as well as I do that business is conducted abducted in cyberspace using pictures of someone's rear end and everything, you know. And
you're done. The way you're sounding, you think that business is conducted every day with porn. You know, that there's...
I dare say that it is.
Well, that every day guys are sending pictures of their penises to women in business.
I'm saying that the language of business is a harsh, aggressive language, and that the kids are learning it today using this kind of language with their iPhones. All right, so my son said to this girl, you remind me of something that, you know, you remind me of something they make bacon with. Okay, all right, enough said. Is that a bad thing or a good thing? I don't know. I don't know. A better man than me can answer that.
If your son said something to a girl that she's a pig?
Yeah.
That's a bad thing.
Well, Mr. Ender, I'm glad you feel comfortable enough to, you know, lord it over another human being that way. I'm a progressive. I'm a liberal. I don't do that. This gentleman seems to take exception to that. But I am a liberal. And what makes me a liberal? A man has the right to say to a woman she's a pig every bit as much as a woman should say that to a man. Would you agree, Tony? Is that his name, Tony?
Yeah, it's Tony.
An adult?
You'd agree with that, Tony?
An adult, yes. An adult would have that right. A 13-year-old child doesn't have that right. A 13-year-old child should be under the supervision of his parents. And if you're raising a child to be that way, that's bad for the child.
What if they're engaged in business?
What do you mean business? At 13?
Yes. I mean, I don't know. It could be any kind of business. It could be like a magazine subscriptions or something.
Oh, come on, will
the
you?
Only time business and morality get together is when you're a prostitute. That's when business and morality come together.
All right. I think it's very interesting that you called a 13-year-old girl a whore. All right. Thank you
I
very
didn't.
Much.
He didn't. No, he did not say that.
I think he alluded to it.
No, he did not. Tony, thank you very much for your call. 877-876-PHIL.
Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
Your show is on in England? Or?
No, it's on in Canada. That gentleman obviously is British.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's because I heard you say Canada, but then I heard this guy. When I hear an English accent, the first thing I'm, you know, the English accent's the next best thing to having something to say. So,
you're a liberal and a progressive, man, with a lot of put-downs here tonight. I'll tell you that, Don. 877-876-PHIL. Ron in San Jose. Go ahead, Ron.
Oh, hi. You know, I
hi.
Think the reason why the sun acts like that is because the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. The son should be arrested for indecent exposure, and shame on the father for defending your son for doing a despicable act like that. I can understand why the son thinks the way he does when the father is defending actions like this.
Well, sir, I'm not. I don't want my son to be sending pictures of his penis to every female he meets.
You
but
said
it
that it was okay because it was electronic. That's the same as defending it.
I was saying that it was higher class. It was of a higher grade kind of action than if you were to just walk
nonsense.
Up to the door.
Nonsense.
Why do you say nonsense?
Shame on you. Because
let me ask
still
you this.
Sending an electronic representation to a girl, that's still despicable. And how dare you defend it?
If a man walks up to your front door where you're at work and your wife answers the door and he just opens his overcoat, that's crude and it's vile. If, however, the same guy sends an iPhone photograph, you know it's coming from someone that it can at least afford an iPhone. Right?
No.
No, you don't? You don't know that?
A bunch of nonsense.
No.
I reject that category.
No, sir, it's not comparative reality. All I'm saying is you know that man sent that... The penis that you're looking at.
Who has the twisted morality? It's wrong to send an electronic.
No, sir. I'm saying that the image, the cyber image that you're looking at came...
By definition, you're defending the son's... Oh, it's not so bad because it's electronic.
No.
Nonsense.
No, not electronic. I'm saying because he can afford an iPhone, and don't you think any girl would look at that and say, all right, points for that.
Points
no.
for what,
no.
man? She's
no.
getting a picture
no, no,
of this
no.
kid. This is a shocking picture to this girl. Oh, well, points for the guy because he sent it over an iPhone.
You know, both of you guys are either dishonest or you're not very bright. When the iPhone first came out, what did we hear? Everybody's in line for an iPhone, 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 iPhone. Anybody that had an iPhone, iPhone, iPhone. Now a guy's got
your
an iPhone.
Something despicable, period.
Oh,
just
you know, you both of you guys
just
are hippies. You're such a hippie.
It's wrong
the
to
hypocrisy.
Send an electronic.
The hypocrisy is enough to make me vomit.
They're both wrong. Don't give me the comparative morality stuff.
You know what? I don't think you know what comparative morality is, saying that it's okay for me to do this and it's okay for you to do that. This is not comparative morality. It's simply saying my son did a bad thing, but is it as bad? No, because it's on an iPhone.
Yes, so what if it's on an iPhone?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
All right. Thank you very much. Good call there, Ron. Going to take a break here before I flip my lid. 877-876-PHIL. I don't understand, and I don't think that anybody else understands, and I never will understand, how sending a girl, even if you're a 13-year-old boy, sending a girl an image of your privates over an iPhone is somehow to be lauded or praised. This is the father. This is Ron, Don Mixa, who we know. Don, he's a professor. He's an educated man. And he said, well, my son did do that, which is about as it's, and I agree with that gentleman that called from Toronto. I think it's, I hate to say this, but because the father's on the phone, very abnormal behavior, very abnormal. And then he says, well, at least he did it via an iPhone, and a girl's going to see that. Points for that. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with our final round of phone calls for Don Mixa on cyberbullying and cyber texting, or sexting, on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
No, I said, if it's a virtual-looking
thing, see what I'm saying? This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Epic fail.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Still to come on our show tonight, Senator Vitter threatens to sue radio stations for playing an ad that is critical of his life, you know, with mistresses of the night, you know, the Storyville, the hookers. So naturally, we're going to play the ad for you tonight. Our number 877-876-PHIL, we have with us Don Mixa from University of Washington on cyberbullying. We're going to get back to some phone calls. And Don, your point on the copy machine, just hold on for a second, okay, when we get to a phone call here. Here is Sherry. Hold on for a minute. We got Sherry here listening to us in Charleston, North Carolina on WZTK. Sherry, how you doing? Welcome to the show.
Is that South Carolina?
Are you in South Carolina or North Carolina?
I'm in South Carolina. You know, people
naturally,
because
that's where Charleston is. It's in South Carolina, not North Carolina. Thank you.
Listen here, this professor stupid you've got on here should be locked up for allowing.
Are you? Excuse me. You're talking to me? I take it she's talking to me. Is that right?
Yeah.
I'm talking to you, Mr. Professor. How dare you be such an example for all of these young people crying for help? You're so nonchalant.
No, What I'm saying is the following thing. Haven't you ever sat on a copy machine with your pants off? Haven't you ever seen anybody do that?
Have you ever seen ASS? I have never heard anybody, an adult, talking like this. I can't believe it, Mr. Professor Stupid. For God's sake, you're going to have to go to jail before your son goes to jail.
But you have no idea what you're talking about. My son, if you were down here in Charleston, South Carolina,
somebody would stuff your mouth with a rotten egg and a towel and light it on fire. We don't play that game down here.
I know. I've heard of some of the violence inflicted in the South in the past on people,
you don't have to.
We don't have to. I know where you live.
How dare you set this kind of example
for
your son?
I'm surprised they even let you in the South.
And so is your son if you think it's cute. It's not cute.
You know, if they want a rotten egg, all they got to do is look in your icebox.
Archie's just the funniest person that ever hit the airwaves. You have no idea how nervous I am and upset.
I have my moments.
That somebody actually walks the streets with your attitude.
Ma'am, I asked you, if you've ever worked in an office, you've sat on a copy machine with your panties on.
Wrong. Absolutely wrong.
Well, now that's a lie.
You don't know me. How do you know
that's a lie?
Every office worker in America at one point or another.
Well, I don't know what kind of world you think you're living in, Mr. Stupid Professor. You are really off of your rocker. There's no doubt that you
have no
scruples.
Why don't you call me Mr. Nutty? Then why don't you call me Mr. Nutty Professor, not Mr. Stupid Professor?
No, that's way too nice. You are a very, very stupid man.
You're calling me names and covering up the fact that in your back when you were working before you retired,
you can pay everybody off you want to. You can go ahead and whip out that pocketbook, that wallet of yours, and you pay off everybody that will take your money, because we'll all take your money. Just hand it over.
Let me ask you a question. How much it would cost me to get you off the phone?
I'm not going to take your money on that one. That you lose.
How much will it cost me to get you to hang up?
Get a grip and take care of that son. You've got one chance to do it.
I tell you what.
I fear it's too late.
If you sit on that copy machine, I'll get a grip.
You know, you're doing a very good job, Sherry, with this guy's smart-ass comments. I want you to know. I heard you say you're nervous. You know,
yeah.
Mr. Henry, why would you take the side of a woman that has done nothing but assault me?
I mean, I've heard you saying you've dropped your panties. Why don't you act like a gentleman, all right?
Yeah. There's not a single listener on Mr. Henry's show that would agree with you. Not one. Not a single person would call in and say you're not a stupid person.
Ma'am, I said, how much money would it cost me to get you to hang up? Now, there are people who want to hear the answer to that.
You absolutely are just amazing.
You know, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
No,
I have never in my life. Hey, look, somebody's going to...
You refuse to answer the question, ma'am.
And you're going to watch your son go to jail.
What year in the 60s did you sit on a copy machine with your pants off? Now, people want the answer.
What kind of world are you living in? You are a sick person.
I'm in a world of hurt.
You are a very sick person, and I don't know why they let you walk the streets of that campus.
God, shut up.
Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Hendry.
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
Well, you can be born a Muslim, you can be born a Jew, but you can't...
But if we are going to talk about 9/11, why don't we talk about how...
I'm Elizabeth Dole, and I approve this message.
Epic fail.
It's the world-famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast of the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Where truth is our bitch and where we go through the looking glass each and every night to find you a little bit of that and more. Maybe a couple of laughs along the way. It is Friday night, Saturday morning, and that's a good thing here on our show. And our number, 877-876-PHIL. That's 877-876-PHIL. And our website, philhendryshow.com, where... every day, it seems like we're making new downloads for you, and we've got downloads of tonight's show as well. Starting tomorrow, we've got a brand new classic podcast download for you. That is the Camel Toe one, bud, from Steve Bozell, right?
Yeah, that one was bitching. I know when you picked that one out, I want to hear that one lady going, "You're the biggest freak in the world." I thought that was great.
Yeah, that's funny, man.
You like that one, Robert?
Yeah, I did. I was torn between that one and the other one. Well, you talking about that telethon?
Well, the telethon. Oh, baby, wait till we get that one loaded in. I was listening to an hour of a Margaret and Ted Bell telethon for the new bowling shirts that were coming out for Ted Bell back a few years ago. Oh, my God. And R.C. Collins was calling up. Every time Margaret tried to sing that song, the theme from the Mary Tyler Moore Show, R.C. Collins would call up and fart.
Yeah, I heard that's radio to me.
Yeah. Anyway... So go on over to the website, philhendryshow.com, downloads, the news feed, comment section, emails, and, of course, all of that great, great radio that we have archived and live for you. In fact, we're on a video feed right now. If you guys have a backstage pass, you can plug us in right now for the last hour. We got a bunch of things to do this hour. There's a bunch of stories here that have got me ready to just, I don't know. I'm fine, but What the hell? One of the problems is because of what I do, I'm closer to it than most people.
On account of what you care of the news?
Yes, because of what I do for a living. I am, most of the people that are listening to us right now, you know, they're normal people. They're, okay, I have to go to the store. There's a lot of people in their cars right now. We do a lot of radio for our third shift friends. So there are a lot of people either in the cars or they're at work or they're, you know, going to or coming home from it. And I may say, oh, wow, this story's got me nuts. Well, what happened, Phil? Because we're not next to the news until we get home. And some of this stuff is so insignificant that drives me around the bend that I want to just commit homicide. And there's people out there, what? Well, I don't get it.
Yeah, I know, man, but that's your job, you know.
Well, it is. But, I mean, if, for instance, I saw a story, and I'll get to it here, about this guy, what's his name, Alan Grayson from Orlando, that representative from Orlando. Now, I know a lot of people that sort of vaguely familiar with him. He's a big mouth. He's got a big fat yap on him. And he's always talking about how proud he is being a Democrat, which is great, and how much he hates Republicans and what a bunch of douchebags they all are. And that may be true, too. Today, he says that, and one more thing, 9/11 was caused by Bush. I mean, I get it, sir, that you are trying desperately to stay in the news each and every day by saying one more absolutely indefensible, asinine thing. And when I say indefensible, I don't care how many fake degrees you got from Harvard. Oh, man.
Are you kidding me, man? A guy saying a bunch of stuff like that and everything?
Well, bud, don't pretend like you care.
I really don't.
Well, then don't pretend like it, okay? I mean, you don't even know what I'm talking about, do you? What did I just say, dude? You?
Yeah, man, you need to lay down.
What time are you getting off tonight?
1 o'clock. Don't worry about it. It is important to me. Well, we'll get to it. But first, here's a story that is a heartbreaker, man. And so, yeah, I'm going from this guy Grayson to this. But this is, I know a couple of people who are in this situation, and it's pissing me off. And now what do I hear today? Nearly 50% leave the Obama Mortgage Aid program. Nearly 50% of all people who are initially trying to get relief through the Obama Mortgage Aid program, it's a complete and utter failure. It's a flop. It's a flop. Now, I'd love to blame Obama, but you know what I'm really about? I want to know why the damn thing didn't work. I want to know why. I don't want to just say, ha-ha, another failure by Obama. That's not good enough for me, because I know people that have lost their homes, that were trying to get their homes refinanced or otherwise get their payments reworked through this Obama Mortgage Aid program, going through their banker, and it was fraud. That's what it was, fraud. Wholesale fraud by an industry that already had criminally maneuvered themselves into the biggest, blackest, darkest hole in history. And now, after getting some dollars to keep their asses afloat, and Obama says, let's do a little bit of mortgage aid going on here. What do you guys got? And I want you banks to work with people. And if they are making their payments, we'll see what we can do. You know, oh, forget it, man. You might as well have said to the coyote, hey, there's the hen house. You mind just keeping an eye on the chair? Oh, no, not at all. Thank you, because I'm going to be busy with some other stuff. Sure. You talk about the most ill-thought, ill-prepared. I mean, it was a great thing to remember when people were kind of excited about it. Oh, wow, this mortgage aid thing, this is a great idea because a lot of people are going to lose their homes. And what happened was I never in my life saw such a simple concept get butchered beyond recognition within minutes. All of a sudden, jackballs that never should have bought a home are looking to get mortgage relief, while people who were making their payments and were making their payments every month but just couldn't afford the nut anymore, and we're looking to have it refined, nobody wants to talk to them. And meanwhile, we got these guys, Acorn. I'm not putting Acorn down, but what the hell have you guys got to do with any of this? We're talking about people that bought homes and were making payments and could afford it when they bought it, and we're not talking about this, I never should have signed the papers, and it's a subprime loan, and oh my goodness gracious, what am I doing? We're talking about people that I know.
You mean white people?
Yes, white people who...
Will you shut up about white people?
we're talking about people that are making their payments, not white, necessarily white people. And so these people that I know, and this is the part that just... Whew, they had a big file all the papers they needed to have, all of their financials, all of the phone numbers of the people that they talked to, and they had all of the appraisals they were supposed to get. And they had the, and I'm telling you, this bank ran their asses ragged. And I wish I would, my producer advised me not to say the name of the bank. They are extremely prominent. They're not B of A, but they're almost as big. And they ran these poor people ragged, one stupid bastard after the next, some smiling jackball with a little name tag. And they go in there and they, well, now, do you have your, yes, we have it right here. Well, you need to make me copies. Okay, this will be the 658,000th copy that we've made of this. But, of course, why would he do that? Every week. And they phoned them and they called them and they followed up and they said this and they said that and they knew a person who knew this. And I got to tell you one other thing. There may be some very well-meaning people out there, but if you ever meet anybody who says to you, hey, listen, I know how to do this, okay, because I'm a this or that, run. There's not one stupid clown out there that knows how to work it. So forget it. There might be a few people that got lucky. And when I say lucky, man, I mean lucky. There ain't nobody knows how to work this game at all because it's fraud from beginning to the end. Fraud. And I'm telling you, I don't know when the day is going to come that we're going to start this entire industry that we've got in this country called banking. You turn your back on these creeps, and the next thing you know, there they are with their hands back in the till. You know, the president said, let's do a little bit of mortgage relief. Oh, okay. So where is it? Well, I don't know. What we, oh, my ass. You, what did you guys do? I'll tell you what you did. You turned right around and went the opposite direction. You wanted to screw every single human being that you possibly could to try to get every penny back that you could for all of that crap can, all those lousy loans you made, people that want to stay in their houses, people that want to keep their homes, people that want to get these payments reworked. You don't want to do that, man. You want to get your money back from all of these slobs and deadbeats that walked away from the note. Not to mention the mortgage lenders, the brokers, those clowns that walked away too, somebody got to make it up to them. So who's the guy that winds up taking it in the shorts? It's Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner, the people that have been making the payments, the people that were trying to get these. They really believed in this program. They believed in Obama. I got to tell you something, Obama. You know something, man? If I were you and I cared, because I don't know whether you do anymore. I'd get on the phone to these slobs and I'd say, I don't know what you're trying to do. I said there was going to be mortgage aid. Now, what are you bastards doing? I got half the people who were in the program said, we can't take it any longer. We're dropping out. We might as well just go ahead and lose the house because the banks can't do a thing. And the reason why they can't do anything isn't because their hands are tied. No, they can't do anything because they're either too stupid. Now, I'm going to underline that word because I really believe that that's what's been at work here from the very beginning. Too stupid. You understand what that means?
Well, you're saying they should never even have been in the banking business?
Pretty much, yeah. They should never have been in the banking business. Maybe they could have been in fine men's tailoring. They might have been very good as auto mechanics. They might have been fine maybe if they had a bakery. They might have been good here on QVC. I'm looking at a jackass right now selling a diamond set here for $39. They might have been good at a lot of stuff, but this they ain't good at. 630,000 people who had tried to get their monthly mortgage payments lowered through the government program have been cut loose through July, according to the Treasury report. That's about 48% of those who had enrolled since March 2009, and it is up from more than 40% through June. 421,000 achieved permanent loan modification and are making their payments on time. Well, why is it some people were not able to get this and others do? Over 50%, that's not good. Leaving. They don't even want to look at your stupid asses anymore. That's why. All right, I got it out of my system, I think. I could go a whole hour on this, but I can't, man, because there's other jazz, man. There's Mel Gibson, man.
Yeah, man, I can't believe you talk about money. You talk about, like, getting something refinanced.
We're going to find out about Mel Gibson, how much it takes for him to live a year. How about $7 million? Good Lord.
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. 8-7... Why would I kid about that, bud?
$7 million for him to just live?
That's what he spends every year on his own ass. $7 million. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
world-famous Bill Hendry Show.
You know, we have a video cast every night, obviously, the show. We start our video cast an hour before the radio show, so if you have a backstage pass, you can watch us doing our uncensored video feed. And every now and again, we do a Saturday video feed, and we haven't done a yucca feed in a long time, you know.
Man, look, you know how many people want to see you do yucca? And I've seen another guy, he did a video of it, too, and they made it look bad. I don't think nobody knows how to make it.
Yeah, you know, you make it real good.
Well, we made it that one time. Maria and I made it that one time. We put the video up on YouTube. We did not do a live yucca cast. I haven't done a live yucca cast. I would like to do a live yucca cast so that we can do it outdoors, you know, so that we have our get our camera set up so that we go live to the video feed out on the sand or something, man. That would rock, you know, but
you have to get a kind of remote set up.
I don't know, man. Let me talk to Greg about what we can do here, but nonetheless, we are due for a, just before the summer's out, we got to have one, that's for sure. Mel Gibson spends $7.2 million each year on his living expenses. So what?
That is a lot.
Well, yeah, it's a lot, but so what? Well, here's the so what. He tells the court that Oksana only deserves 1%. Now, that may well be true, too. But that's, you know, a big bone of contention. Scandal might have cost Mel Gibson his reputation, but not his lifestyle. The foul-mouthed actor, I like that, the foul-mouthed actor, who will soon learn if he'll be charged for allegedly punching his ex-lover Oksana Grigoreva and threatening to kill her, has told a judge overseeing the couple's bitter custody battle that he blows $600,000 on himself each month. God, that must be something, man. What, 600 G's, Jack? That can't just be, that's got to be like expenses, you know?
Yeah, well, I mean, no, that's saying that he's just chilling.
Yeah, that's what he does for fun.
Now, that's baloney, man. I don't believe that. You're telling me $600,000 a year just for kicks?
That's what they're saying.
No, man, I think what they're saying is that $600,000 includes mortgages that he has to pay. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you mean like on them houses he has?
Yeah, the cat's got, I don't know how many houses. He's also got, like, an island. What the hell's the thing on, you know, is there a mortgage on that?
On what?
On an island?
What island?
He's got an island in Fiji.
He does? I don't know.
He's got an island, man. That's probably, he bought that when they were doing that movie down there. I was just in Fiji. I wasn't just in Fiji, but I was there. I would have liked to have known where his island was. I would have gone over and, I don't know. I would have just trespassed. Anyway, so he says it's $600,000 a month on himself. RadarOnline.com has learned Mel's lawyers detailed his $7.2 million a year, quote, slush fund, end quote, as part of their argument to limit Oksana's child support for their infant daughter, Lucia, to $6,000 a month. Why do they call it a slush fund? The massive chunk of change was at the center of Wednesday's marathon court hearing in which the Russian musician requested a judge increase Mel's support payments for their nine-month-old. While Oksana claims she should be entitled to more, Mel is insisting some of her expenses, such as bodyguards, are a waste. Mel's lawyers are arguing Lucia is a baby and doesn't need more than $6,000 a month that he plans to pay, despite it being only 1% of what he shells out on himself each month. Now, one of the things that we made a point of mentioning during the pre-show, in the state of California, as I'm sure it's true in other states, a child is entitled to the lifestyle that the parent, the providing parent, has. In other words, the child is entitled to the lifestyle commensurate with the parent. So if the parent is living like, you know, the King of Siam, then the child is entitled to live in much the same way, you know.
But what do you mean? The kid gets to have a castle? The kid's not going to have a castle or anything. You never do that.
Not a castle. What are you talking about?
You said the King of Siam.
I'm just saying, man, that if the parent has a lot of money, okay?
Then the kid gets to have a lot of money.
The kid gets to live, not have a lot of money, but the kid gets to live good, see?
All right, well, like if the parent had, now if they have a castle.
Yeah.
Well, you guys forget about the castle, okay? I'm sorry I said the King of Siam. What I'm saying is, if the parent is living good, the kid lives good. Shut up, I don't want to talk anymore about it.
Yeah, but you talk.
I don't want to talk. So that's what the state of California says. So if this guy has got $7.2 million a year, of life. And I'm even giving him the benefit of the doubt and saying, well, let Mel Gibson, that $7.2 million a year, that includes the more, that's his overhead. That's his overhead, man. That's the houses, that's the whatever the hell he's got to pay, you know. Maybe that's the part of the payment, the alimony, the spousal support, if you will, and that's going to go on in perpetuity to his ex-wife, Robin, because they were married more than 20 years, more than 10 years, so... I don't know. In any event, he says it's only $6,000 a month. That's all he wants to pay. Team Mel, that's what they're calling the lawyers, they claim his own expenses are not an extravagance but a necessity. The whopping total is just for his living costs. That's what I thought. His living costs don't even include such luxuries as his private jet. Yet, as Mel continues to live a lavish lifestyle, he's handed over just $18,000 in child support since last December, according to sources inside Oksana's camp. Here's the thing. I don't know how long he was with this chick, and I don't know whether they had any kind of an agreement. She's going to hit him with a palimony claim. That's what I believe is they're getting ready to do. She wants to get a nice fat piece of change for the child in terms of child support, which would then not necessitate any kind of a spousal claim or any palimony claim. But if he's only talking about six G's, which she ain't going to dig, then she'll hit him with palimony, and that's going to be, and that's what he's afraid of, and that's what he's screaming his guts loose on, and that's what he's going ape crap on, and that's why he's ready to commit homicide, and that's, you know, that's that. His wife, Robin Moore, is that her name? Yeah, Robin Moore, his ex-wife, Robin Moore, that was a $1 billion divorce.
Oh, man, are you lying to me?
One with a B?
With a B. A $1 billion divorce. So he was to sell paintings. I have to sell my box at the Laker game. He screamed this to her in this tape recording that you and I heard. His split from Robin after 28 years of marriage was nearly a $1 billion divorce. With no prenuptial agreement, Robin was legally entitled to half of everything Mel had that he had earned, including a host of homes in Malibu, Costa Rica, and his own tropical paradise in Fiji. What do you think of that?
I don't understand, but she gets all that money, though.
She was married 28 years. Over 10 years means, well, you get half of everything that you earned during the marriage.
Right.
Then, if you're married over 10 years, she's going to get spousal support in perpetuity. That means for the rest of her life. And I don't know what that is. Maybe that's what they're figuring in. But she got half of all the property, and she's going to get spousal support. It's crazy, man. World famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876. Phil, Alan Grayson, his big fat mouth, coming up next. What a douchebag this guy is.
Phil Hendry.
Alan Grayson is a representative from Orlando, Florida, and he says he's very insulted in the name of the families of 9/11 victims, except he's not worrying so much about the Ground Zero Mosque, which he refers to as an athletic center. He's angry that George Bush allowed the 9/11 attacks to take place, in his opinion. And I'm sure Ed Schultz sat there with that big stupid look on his face listening to this, that George Bush allowed these 9/11 attacks to happen. Now, it has in the years since been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that the original finger pointers, the George Tenets and the Richard Clarks, going back before the Bush administration to the days of President Clinton, that these people, if you want to begin to track who's responsible, these people had every bit as much to do with the failure to alert the nation as to the attacks on 9/11 as anybody else. And trying to blame all of this on Bush and hang it on Bush, it's the Alan Grayson technique. This guy is one of these real scumbags, and I say that because he's got a lot of education. He does have a great deal of education, and I'm sure he's a bright guy, but he spent a lot of his time, the only way, getting notoriety for himself that I guess he can think to to affect that by saying really ignorant things, calling people killers, and then turning around and saying, why don't you work with us? You're a killer. You're a murderer. Why don't you reach across the aisle and work with us? This is a guy that's got no interest in anybody working with him. It's a guy that's got a lot of interest in making sure the people of Orlando see that he's working for them. He's not doing anything, as far as I can tell. What is a congressman from Orlando doing weighing in on this? Anyway, I don't understand this, Grayson. You're a representative of the people of Central Florida. They got enough problems of their own down there. They got a lot of stuff they got to figure out. Like, one of the things they need to figure out in Orlando is, A, put my show on the air down there, okay? So you can liven up that lousy radio you got there. Oh, it's on the air, I know. But that took years. Years. That's number one. Then number two, do something about the smell, huh? Then number three, anyway, Grayson, in an interview on MSNBC's The Edge Show, said all kinds of let's listen to this marvelous guy.
But if we're all going to talk about 9/11, why don't we talk about how not so much the people who died on 9/11 were disgraced by the possibility of an Islamic athletic center several blocks away. How about the fact that they were disgraced by a president who let it happen, who went on vacation for the entire month of August after he was warned in writing that Osama bin Laden was actually finding targets in New York City and learning about how to take these planes and do terrible things with them.
Oh, in the month of August. In the month of August, Osama bin Laden was learning how to take planes and do these things. In the month of August. Jack, your timeline, man, is about as, your timeline's about as straight as your teeth. Now here he is, Grayson, saying, he says, leave President Obama alone when discussing the controversy over the mosque, because he's a president that you shouldn't worry about. It's Bush.
So who really let down those people on 9/11? Was it Barack Obama? Was it the people who want to build some kind of health club in downtown New York? Or was it the president of the United States right then, George W. Bush?
All right. I'm sorry, Representative Grayson, that nobody seems to be interested in you for a larger office, for bigger things. And you have to say these things that are, they're almost tired, you know, they've been beat into the ground so much. Is it that people are suddenly getting a sniff as to the reality of the world and they aren't buying the Bush caused it all argument anymore? Is that it? You need to sort of reinvigorate that? Is that you guys are talking about intolerance when it comes to this argument about this mosque? It ain't never been about intolerance, man. Nobody's talking about being intolerant to Muslims. Nobody's talking about being intolerant to Islam. Nobody's talking about hating Muslims. No one's talking about hating Muhammad. It's got nothing to do with it. But you guys, you know, the argument is lost on you. The idea of sensitivity when it comes to the feelings of Muslims, everybody gets it. The idea of sensitivity when it comes to the feelings of immigrants, everybody gets it. The idea of sensitivity when it comes to the feelings of French people, when it comes to the feelings of Martians, when it comes to the feelings of you. But when it comes to Americans and how we feel, man, take your place at the back of the line. Nobody cares. You're an American. You got it great. No one cares about how you feel. Why, hell, if you get 3,000 of your people killed, that's nothing. You deserve it. You should get a little bit of the world's pain. Oh, is that how it works? So forget about what's right and what's wrong. Let's just balance out the scales. America is rich, it's fat, it's beautiful. So let's butcher up 3,000 of their people just so we can feel good. And if you guys cry about it, we got all kinds of grievances going all the way back to the beginning, man. About this and that and how America caused everything. You know, if you knew anything about history, and one of the things... I just got done, you know that thing I've been watching, bud?
You're watching that World War I thing, man. Going to bed and everything. You gotta get some sleep.
No, man, no. This World War I thing I've been watching is the most fantastic thing in the history of the world, because this is where it's at, man. This is where it's at. America? Good God, man, we've only run the show for about 60 years. It was France, it was England, it was Germany, it was Russia. They had empires that stretched the globe. And they were screwing with everybody. The cats in the Middle East, the Ruskies, the people down in the Balkans, the people up in the Baltic states. They were messing with everybody's heads. They were trying to get a piece of all kinds of pies. And there's America. We were sitting there with our thumb in our ear. You talk about a bunch of hayseeds. We didn't know which end was up. All we did, as usual, is just send the troops over there, man, to get butchered up and machine guns so we can free up another bunch of people. Right? Anybody talking about America? Man, all we did was step into the breach and try to save the bacon of these guys like the frogs and the British. That's it. Don't give me this crap. Learn a little bit of history. What America did to cause 9/11. Why don't you ask the British what they did to cause 9/11, or the frogs, or the Russians? Why don't you ask the Turks? You want to go back that far, man? Why don't you learn a little bit about this world that we're living in? The Americans caused 9/11. And by the way, I got another one for you here, because we're going to hear from this scumbag who is the guy that's running this Ground Zero Mosque. As far as I'm concerned, that's what it is. I don't care what this... Let me tell you something. Again, it's about sensitivity, you know?
But what do you mean about sensitivity?
You're talking about like everybody got our feelings hurt.
What I'm talking about, man, how come everybody worries about how the Muslims feel? Why don't they worry about how we feel?
Well, what do you mean, we?
What do I mean, we? What are we?
A man?
An American. That's what I am. Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. Somebody pissed me off. Someone hurt my feelings. Someone made me very scared. Someone hurt my country. You know, does anybody care about how I feel about that stuff? The whole bunch of Americans would like to have a little bit of consideration, just a little tiny bit of consideration. Every time we talk about this thing called consideration and sensitivity, we're talking about Muslims or somebody else. Nobody wants to talk about us. And because the idea is so foreign, it's so foreign, guys like Oberfuhrer on there saying that it's about intolerance, man. Are you, look at Oberfuhrer, you can't be as dumb as you look, man. Honest to God. I mean, you already look like some stumble bum that ran his head into the goalpost too many times. I don't know what, you're a pretty big guy.
You think he played football?
I think he played football. I think he played football and he put a dent in his head. That's what he's a big dude. No question. But what I'm saying is this. He keeps saying, you know, tolerance, tolerance, tolerance. But nobody's talking about intolerance, you dumbass. Well, all we're talking about is it really sucks to see that, and I'm sorry. Now, I hate to piss you off, but I got to play this. It's an interview on 60 Minutes with Ed Bradley on September 20th, 2001. Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf talking about the role U.S. policy played in leading up to the 9/11 terrorist attacks.
I wouldn't say that the United States deserved what happened. But the United States policies were an accessory to the crime that happened. Because we have been an accessory to a lot of innocent lives dying in the world. In fact, in the most direct sense, Osama bin Laden is made in the USA.
All right, so a criminal act, a collection of criminals, psychopaths, if you will, a collection of perhaps psychotic individuals, a collection of mass murderers, mass slaughters, abnormal human beings as legitimate as Nazis, murder 3,000 people, and we have to say that it was caused by the victim. So if you're prepared to accept that the Jews brought on their own butchery in the Holocaust, and you're prepared to embrace yet again the argument that a woman who wears a tight skirt and a revealing blouse deserves to be raped, then we're right back at square one, man. We're back in the 1970s. We're making those arguments all over again. And this guy, Ralph, whether or not policies forced a certain kind of criminality into the world, it's got nothing to do with it, man. That's like saying that the American capitalist system, with its haves and its have-nots, with its immense wealth and at times its immense poverty and loss, that the strain between the classes in this country, that the immense challenge, the immense opportunity, and the immense depression that comes with failure, that brings on the crime that we suffer from, and therefore we should do away with the capitalistic free enterprise system and do something else. Well, what would that be? Gee, I don't know. But obviously it ain't working because there's cats who are out there committing crimes. Why? They're made in the USA, man. Their frustration, their failure, their thievery, Their psychopathy, their psychosis, made in the USA. When are we going to get serious and start talking to these guys like the stupid asses that they are? If I was Bradley, I would have taken the earring out of my ear, which looks pretty stupid.
What are you talking about?
That Ed Bradley wears an earring. He looks like a dumbass.
What are you talking about? Ed Bradley's the best.
That earring he's got, man, has got to go. I mean, it probably went. Nonetheless.
I think he's dead.
Who?
Ed Bradley.
No, he didn't.
I think he did. I think he died tragically, yeah. I think he is.
He ain't dead. If I was Bradley, I would have looked at that imam and I'd said, you know what, get out of here. Just get out of here. I'm sick of listening to you. I'm sick of looking at you. Get out of here. But you don't understand. You see, we have, oh, get. And now this guy's going to put a freaking mosque up down there. You heard him. This is the guy he's putting a mosque in. Well, in many ways, he's made in America. So if you guys want to get rid of crime in America, then America's got to stop being America. Because America being America creates criminals. Thank you. I'm Imam Hendry, and I hope you'll join me at the Hendry Mosque, which I'm going to not only have a mosque, but I'm also going to turn it into a pool room at night. And we'll have 6 tables, okay? It'll be fantastic. Bring your own cues, but all beautiful flat tables. And anyway, 877-876-PHIL, coming back here on a world-famous Phil Hendry show in just a couple of minutes. A man crusades against a building that looks like a swastika. And the ACLU and parents go after a school uniform dress code. The swastikas. Back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show.
You're listening to the world-famous
You're an idiot.
Phil Hendry show.
You're an idiot. I got it right here, man. Don't worry about it. I got it, bud. Before we get to anything else here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Don't forget our website, philhendryshow.com. Twitter, twitter.com/realphilhendry. twitter.com/philhendryshow. And facebook.com/philhendry. Senator Vitter threatens to sue radio stations for airing ad. Attorneys for U.S. Senator David Vitter threatened on Thursday to sue radio stations if they continued airing a commercial critical of the senator's past conduct with women's.
Why is Congress so corrupt? David Vitter, he's part of the corruption. Now it's time to man up. A judge found Vitter committed battery on a woman. It was an unprovoked attack. Next, Vitter's notorious scandal with the D.C. madam. She ran an escort service for powerful men in Washington, if you know what I mean. Then a former prostitute said she, well, serviced Vitter on numerous occasions in New Orleans. That's family values, right? Now, Vitter's Senate aide for Women Affairs holds his girlfriend hostage while slashing her face with a knife. Vitter didn't fire the aide. Vitter gave him 2 more years on his public payroll. Some conservative, huh? Hey, Vitter, what's next? Republicans, it's time to man up for change. Chet Traylor, former enlisted U.S. Army, former state trooper, criminal prosecutor, district judge, retired justice, Louisiana Supreme Court. Chet Traylor, conservative Republican, Senate.
I'm Chet Traylor, candidate for the United States Senate, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Chet Traylor for Senate.
I'm Chet Traylor.
Epic fail.
So,
where do you get that?
Is Chet Traylor a Republican, Jace? Is this still the Republican primary, or is it the
epic fail
primary? Anyway, so we thought we'd roll that. It is, he's a Republican. It is pretty nasty. I don't blame Vitter. That's I can hear stuff in there about, well, we heard a guy say, I know the stuff about the lady, but cut somebody's face with a knife. What the hell?
Sound like a lot like they heard, I mean, it was in the news, and they're saying, yeah, well, we can say it, you know.
Yeah, well, they're making it sound like it's fact. I mean, if it's stuff that is has been alleged but hasn't been proved, then I think we all have to agree that it's nothing more than a
epic fail.
You cut out with that.
Why, man? Doubter got to use it.
That was Doubter, man. Quit. Don't do it.
Tell me what to do. It's my show.
Don't do it, man.
Yeah, don't do it.
Oh, telling me what to do. Give me that.
Give me. Don't do it.
Epic fail.
Yeah, I did it. Tell me what to do.
Man, I'm telling you, blowing it.
Oh, then I'll blow it, all right? A couple of years, what are you laughing at? A couple of years ago, the swastika-shaped building at the Naval Amphibious Base in San Diego, discovered by Google Earth, became an internet hit. Former U.S. resident and now Israeli citizen Avram Segal got word from a friend in 2006 about the building and made getting rid of the offensive symbol his own personal pet project. He involved the Anti-Defamation League and Congresswoman Susan Davis. The Navy started thinking about options to reshape the building, but it turned out to be an expensive and lengthy process, and today the building remains the way it is built. The first option for renovation cost $625,000. It was too expensive. This guy's still on the thing. What the hell is this about, man? Anyway, this guy wants to... Have you seen this? Go to the news... Go to your local news thing there on the internet and take a look at this building from the air. It's the Navy Amphibious Base in Coronado, San Diego. It's a group of buildings, and it's shaped just like a swastika. Now, I don't know whether or not it was done on purpose, when it was built, how it was built. The regional director of the ADL in San Diego said it was not just a whim. When you look at some of the drawings prior to the construction of the building, it's hard to dismiss that it's in the shape of a swastika. I don't know what the motivation of the man who designed it was, but it's obviously highly inappropriate for any government building in the U.S., especially for a series of military buildings, to be shaped as a symbol of the regime that killed thousands of Americans. Now, I guess this thing was built, it was constructed in 1969. How about that, huh?
What about that thing about Nixon?
Well, okay, you never know about some of these guys, and this is the opposite, but I actually interviewed a group of construction contractors. I actually interviewed a construction contractor who worked on Richard Nixon's office remodeling in New York back in, I guess it was the early to mid-70s. And it also happened that these guys were not only construction workers, contractors, they were carpenters, they were electricians, they were also Buddhists. So what they did, unbeknownst to President Nixon, and this was his, I think it was his law office in New York, this was after he was president, they put in the wall between the studs Buddhist symbols, mandalas. Now, they were all intended as good things. These represented good luck. They represented good health. They represented, you know, sort of the purification of the soul or whatever spiritual trip they were trying to. I forget what the cat told me, but he said, well, we put these things in there. He said we drew them on paper. Sometimes we hung them in there between the studs before we put up the drywall and before we went ahead and put the, you know, finished the office.
That's, to me, that kind of stuff's trippy.
So they did that, but that was a good thing. You know, that they did for President Nixon. There was these Buddhist, seriously, Buddhist carpenters who were redoing his office. But this guy that built the swastika building, I don't know what his story is, man. I don't know what, you know, a joke? Who knows? And nobody took, who the hell's looking at it from the air, you know? Who knew about Google Earth back in 1969? Meanwhile, one other story here, ACLU, and this is kids often rail against uniforms because they mean style imitations, but why would parents fight a uniform dress code? Well, according to the American Civil Liberties Union, there was a complaint on behalf of four Woodsocket, Rhode Island parents. Uniforms would be an added financial burden for families. Dig that. Additionally, the ACLU says the uniforms won't do anything to improve the quality of education at the kids' school. The policy, due to be implemented next month, requires public school students to wear black or khaki pants, maroon or gray pants, and closed-toe shoes. This is a load of crap. You can get any kid to, you know, make a uniform that looks like that. The ACLU filed the complaint with the state on Wednesday and has asked Rhode Island's education commissioner to block the city from imposing the dress code. We'll see what happens, but they got a lot of kids in public schools around here that wear dress code, that have uniforms, and what the hell, man? I don't know.
I don't know about them, man.
Yeah, get out of here. Let's go, man. It's the weekend. Let's get out of here. Thank you so much. God bless. Our show is produced by Jason Rantz. Technical direction by my good friend, Don Naylor. Don Naylor. And Dan Northcraft is the screener. And I'm Phil Hendry. Jason Rantz is the producer. We say that?
No.
Jason Rantz, the producer.
No.
Anyway, we'll see you on Monday. PhilHendryShow.com. Don't forget it. Get out of here,
Phil Hendry. Go to TalkRadioNetwork.com for more information.